You're listening to Blind Entrepreneurship, an interview series podcast that highlights the stories of the top business professionals around the world. In each episode, we explore how entrepreneurs overcame blindness in business in order to execute their vision. This podcast is brought to you by Penji. I'm your host, Jonathan Grzbowski, and today we have Jared Martin on the show. Jared is the co-founder and chief operations officer at OnePitch. He handles all business operations for OnePitch, along with strategy, support, business development, and hiring. He studied communications with an emphasis in marketing at Cal State University, Long Beach. In his free time, he enjoys surfing, eating cheap street food, which, who doesn't? Cooking and exploring the outdoors. And I might add that he is also a WWE fan like myself. After the recording of this interview, I got to learn a little bit more about Jared, even more than just talking about business. And what I like about his approach to business is genuine, honest, and caring. He's a good guy and someone that you can trust. He's one of those guys where if you don't have the best experience with either this service, future services, but in this particular situation, OnePitch, he's going to do everything in his power to get it right. The good thing for Jared is that he may not have to do that too often because OnePitch is an amazing service. PR is one of those things that we all know we need, but it's difficult to get right. I've been using OnePitch myself for a few months now, and this is not a paid endorsement by any stretch of the imagination, but I love the simplicity of the service. It makes PR more manageable. In this episode, we talk about how in order to get higher tier press, you primarily have to build a foundation. And that begins with a good story. Most businesses try to go big and directly after the larger tier press, which is the Forbes and the Inks of the world. But Jared recommends to start small and work your way up. And starting small could be local, small blogs, things that may not necessarily matter once you make it, but they matter in the beginning because it properly formulates the story. We also talk about what a good and bad pitch looks like, and they give you the TLDR version of it, use bullet points, get to the meat and potatoes of your pitch, and follow up. Today's episode is sponsored by Penji. Are you in charge of marketing for your business and need graphic design support? Let Penji design anything you need for your business, from a logo to your marketing materials, sales sheets, social media content, and so much more. Penji helps you achieve more with unlimited graphic design support, daily output, and a dedicated project manager, all at one flat monthly rate. We have an exclusive offer to the Blind Entrepreneur community. Head over to penji.co and use the coupon code BLIND for 15% off your first month. Again, that's penji.co. PENJI.co and use the coupon code BLIND for 15% off your first month of Penji. And now, let's get to today's episode. Jared, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jonathan. Thanks for having me today, man. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. We're excited to have you. This is a topic of conversation that we don't necessarily get into too much. But before we get into all of that, I'd love to lay the foundation as to why you're a qualified expert to talk about the main topic that we're talking about today, which is ways to get press without a huge budget.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited to talk about this topic today, especially because we're doing a lot of cool things to help folks gain press who you know maybe may not be able to afford it like some of the other big dogs in the industry here. But myself, my background is very heavily in marketing. Communications and in public relations. I've actually been doing all three of those for about 6 years now. And more specifically, I've been working at OnePitch. We launched our company in February 2017, and we focus primarily on media relations within the public relations industry. And what we're doing is we're helping journalists, reporters, and editors at newsrooms connect with brands, whether they be startups or brands who are, you know, are within the mid-market space or who are well-established and looking to, you know, get their name out there in front of their target audience and inform them about a new story or, you know, a new product that they're launching or, you know, a plethora of other newsworthy types of information that they want to get in front of their, again, their target demographic to inform them about something.
So why is press important? Do we even need press if we're a startup, if we're a business? I mean, when I, just to kind of give context, every time I see an article, it's primarily from larger companies who are constantly in the news. So I'd love to hear your approach and your mindset as to how important press is to a marketing strategy.
Certainly. No, press is very important. And I think there's a really interesting model that I recognized a little while ago. Is by Jeannie Dietrich over at SpinSucks, and it's called the PESO model. And it's a combination of different media strategies along with marketing strategies. And one of them is earned media. And that's primarily, you know, what press revolves around is earning a spot or a placement, that they call it, within a well-known publication. You know, you mentioned that you see a lot of these big name brands within publications, and they tend to get in there a little more easily because of the types of news that they have. You know, it might be a large funding round, or it might be, you know, a very well-known C-suite executive coming into the company. And a lot of those folks have direct relationships with the newsrooms, and they have their one-on-one contact that they can provide their information to. So the stories tend to happen a lot quicker, and they drive readership, which is why you tend to see those more often in these larger, well-known publications. But startups are still important, as we know, and we want to make sure that folks know about them too. And what we've seen a lot of, especially, is, you know, the startups who are quote unquote disrupting an industry tend to get a little bit more press than others, or ones who, you know, raise a really large round. They're tending to get a little bit more exposure. And again, that's because it does drive readership, but the smaller guys, you know, they still need to get that love. They still need to get their name, their message out there. And we've seen, especially a lot of regional publications, you know, your business journals or your local newspapers, that's where they tend to get their first press, or where, you know, early on they have a little bit more success. And sometimes it tends to be just because it's, you know, it's a local market. It's a new business. They want to talk about them. They want to promote them within their local community. And then from there, you know, the process begins to facilitate relationships and build relationships with larger newsrooms. And eventually, you know, to get their story told, you know, everyone's hope and dream is to get into the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. And I'm sure a lot of PR folks can attest to the needy clients that are always asking and demanding that they get placements within there. So it's certainly a process that we've seen. But again, it really starts from kind of a local level and grows from there, depending on, you know, what type of news or story that they're sharing.
So let's break that down a little bit, because I think that's incredibly important. You're saying that in order to get to, say, the New York Times, it is the end goal. You kind of have to build a base before you go right to the top. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to have a foundation, a solid, you know, media presence, if you will, is very important. And part of that reason, from what I've observed and from what I've been told through my conversations with editors and reporters within newsrooms, is they want to know who these people are. And without any real validation behind that, it's hard for them to sometimes justify pursuing a story. You know, I think we're all familiar with some of the bombshell companies that kind of blew up last year with, you know, getting a lot of funding, and then a lot of folks realizing they're not who they really are. And we won't name names here, but I think that just plays to that aspect of, you know, you have a small footprint that folks can read about you and learn about you. That's not just your website, that they, you know, there's a trusted source who is validating the information that you're telling them. And then from there, you know, they can kind of form, okay, this might be a good fit for my beat or for my publication, and my readers might enjoy learning about them.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely huge. And what I love about now I do have to say that I guess I'm a user of your product, and mm-hmm. I've seen how it can help people. And I know from case studies, I'm sure, that you have countless people who have actually used you on a routine basis and are constantly getting put into the press. But I'd love to highlight one of the verbiages that you use on your website, which is the end of bad pitches. So what does a good pitch look like versus a bad pitch? Because I know for a fact that I've pitched a lot of bad pitches. So just to get a better understanding of what you define as a good pitch versus a bad pitch would be incredibly important.
Certainly, and I think first and foremost, it's going to differ across the board. And what I might feel is a good pitch versus somebody else is probably going to be a little bit different because news is ever changing and nothing is really the same. Everything is very unique, you know. But what we've been able to identify is that there's a lot of key factors that go into creating a very solid pitch. And not even talking about the recipient, for example, but just limiting it to the actual message. And what we've done is we've standardized this template and not only provided the PR folks and or the marketing communications folks with a template that they can simply enter their information. They don't need to know all of the different pieces. We've given them the fields to input, and we've just told them, you know, here's the best way to present the information that you want to show them. So what we've seen again is there's a few key elements that go into a really solid pitch. First and foremost is, of course, you know, having links within your pitch so that journalists again can validate. They can dive in and learn a little bit more about you without having to just take your word for it. Secondary to that, we've seen that there's surprisingly a character count limitation is helpful because we know that journalists are not spending a whole lot of time reading through email pitches because they've only got a few minutes to spare in the day to look at those sources and those leads. And so limiting the amount of information on the initial message is super helpful. And also breaking it up, giving them bullet points or giving them, you know, a bullet point that's telling them specifically what you're going to be pitching, and then giving them a couple points that validate why it's relevant to their readers and to their audience. And we've been fortunate over the past year and a half, we've been able to, you know, monitor the trends and just look at what folks are pitching and what's being picked up. And we've seen again that this kind of process, this template, if you will, has been really, really successful. And on the recipient side, we've been told that it's something that journalists really appreciate because it allows them to get through the pitch very quickly and really get to, you know, what the meat and the potatoes is within just a few seconds.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to pitching, do you feel as if that a relationship should be had before you start pitching? Or is it one of those things where if you have a compelling story, then it's just going to get picked up because everything that you just said is on point?
I think both are very true. What we've seen again is those who have very compelling stories gain interest very quickly. So much so that the way our system works, you know, we send out a daily email, and within minutes, those emails are being responded to, and stories are beginning to take shape because of that. Those who do not, you know, it may take a little more time, and building a solid foundation is certainly a great way to start a relationship. Me personally, I'm a very big advocate of Twitter, and most of the journalism space is very heavily active on that platform, especially within the technology sector. And what we have identified, what I've personally identified, is, you know, connecting with them in a more personal and natural way, and not necessarily, you know, pitching them right off the bat, especially if you don't have news. But just kind of, you know, creating a friendship, approaching them like it's you know, it's your buddy from back home, or it's, you know, your desk mate who you know, you just want to maybe go grab some coffee with, or just joke about the game, or, you know, something that you watched about last night. Those are, you know, ways that you can kind of build a foundation, and then from there, you know, you gain their trust, and then, you know, you can pique their interest a little bit more, and it's more of a passive way rather than just immediately pitching them off the bat, especially again if you don't have any news that's worthy of being shared.
I'm curious just because I couldn't agree more with what it is that you just said, because I won't go into my belief, but I would like to hear your view. Do you think romance is dead? And I don't necessarily mean that in the aspect of like physical and emotional romance, but more so romance from a business perspective. Do you believe that romance is dead?
You know, it's I think it's starting to lose its shape. And I think, and I hate to say this, but I think technology is playing a little factor in that. But I also believe that there's those of us who recognize the importance of, you know, having that quote unquote romance and making sure that, you know, we find little ways to incorporate it into the relationship. And I think for me especially, I'm very big on having in-person one-on-one conversations. And I think that's where, you know, we differ a little bit from some of the other folks in our space. Even though we're a small team, we really make it a point to connect with all of our users one-on-one, and we really make it a point to see them in person. And by we, I'm talking about myself. but I think, you know, having that that element of romance is really important. And to your point, I think it's dying a little bit. But again, I think there's those of us that recognize it and know how important it is to keep that and maintain it.
Yeah. And so do you believe, I mean, you hinted at it briefly, but I just want to, if we can kind of dive in a little bit more, because I think it's so important, is the idea behind the relationship building. And I don't know if you are as crazy and systematic as I am, but I have data sheets upon data sheets that indicate who writes about what and what they like to do and how they like it and their Twitter posts and things like that. Like, do you have any type of, like, coming from an expert like yourself, who's constantly at one point pitching and constantly talking to these type of publicists and things of that nature, do you have some form of system to kind of keep track of all these different things that people like and the specific relationship that you're able to build with that particular individual?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I would not be doing well at my job if I didn't have some type of system in place to really inform myself of the people that I'm working with and that I'm speaking with. And you mentioned a spreadsheet. You know, I have spreadsheets on spreadsheets of a bunch of different individuals and who they are, and kind of have built out almost like a profile on the people that I work with. And part of that reason is because I need to have that foundation to know who they are, what they write about, who their readers are, what their publication tends to focus on. And then from there, you know, I'm really cued in. Again, I use Twitter a lot, excuse me. And I'm on there throughout the day to monitor conversations, to monitor news that's occurring. So I really try to make it a point to keep myself relevant and to make sure that I'm paying very close attention to the breaking news cycle, whether it be related to the sector that we focus on, which is technology, or, you know, of course, whether it's some type of political news or anything else across the board. I think it's important to have a system. And, you know, right now there are other ways that, you know, you can kind of collect this information, but it's what we've seen, especially with some of these other services in space, is that it's not allowing folks to be as effective as possible, because there's still kind of this limitation. And what we, again, have seen with us is if you have that news story, people are going to bite on it and they're going to jump on it dramatically. But maybe you don't have a really interesting story, or, you know, your company is interesting, but it's not the right time. We've seen folks, quote unquote, you know, save information for later and reach out at a later time. And I think, again, part of that is just because there's this idea of relevance. And, you know, if you write about something that, you know, my company services or has a product in the space of, then I know it's going to be of interest. And at some point, you know, down the line, we'll connect. And the good news is that, you know, now you know about me. Mm-hmm. So I think, again, it's important. And you got to have some type of system. But at the same time, you know, there are certain tools that you can utilize that may not require that, but will still allow you to get those opportunities.
I mean, I think that one of the biggest things, and you can kind of hint at this, expand if you so choose, is the mm-hmm. is the follow-up. Because in addition to the romance side of just not wanting to build a relationship, a lot of people don't have the attention span to actually go ahead and continue following up with either the same pitch or a different pitch or what have you. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that's the case in pitching your business?
You know, it's kind of funny. I was in a live Twitter chat yesterday, a freelance chat with Michelle Garrett. And one of the questions was about follow-ups. And I believe it was along the lines of how many do you send? And I don't typically send even more than one, because I know, you know, generally I'm going to craft something that's strong and that's interesting and that somebody's going to at least open and read. And if they don't respond, then I've taken, you know, as a grain of salt and understood, okay, maybe this is not of interest. But what I've seen that works really well, especially with cold pitching, is, you know, if you send somebody something initially and you are going to follow up, make sure it's within, you know, a couple of days. I don't ever go past the 5-day mark if I'm going to send a second message. And I always make it a point to add more information and add more value onto my first. I'm never just saying, oh, hey, did you see my message? Or, oh, you know, just circling back, wanted to see if you were interested. I'm always giving them more. And I've found time and time again, that tends to at least pique their interest. And again, you know, maybe they're not interested at that point in time, but now they have access to more information. And I've, you know, kind of explained my story a little bit further for them, which, you know, again, helps full circle with gaining that placement down the line.
I've read a couple of interviews that you've been in, just to kind of just by doing research prior to this conversation. And I think it's really great to have a proper story. And your story revolves around your background. But what I've seen is throughout this entire interview, reading all of these interviews, you kind of have the pitch down right. You know, not only yourself, you seem like an incredibly confident person, but at the same time, you understand the business. To give hope to the people that are listening that may not necessarily know their story, how long did it take you to truly understand yourself? How long did it take you to truly understand the business? And is there any tips or advice that you could give to people to better craft their story?
Sure. Yeah. And that's a pretty tricky question, I will admit. you know, I think for us as a business, we knew what we were going to do long before we got started. And we recognized, and when I say we, my co-founder, Rebecca Bamberger, she's owned a PR agency for over 10 years. So she's really the leader behind One Pitch and the visionary behind what we're doing. And she identified the problem long ago, and time and time again, it had solution after solution that really wasn't effective and wasn't providing the results that she was looking for. And so that's really what helped, helped us take shape, and really what helped us formulate what we're doing and why we're doing it. And I think, you know, again, over the past 2 years, we've really come into fruition. I'm fortunate. I've been able to have a lot of conversations with the folks within newsrooms, as well as folks on the agency side and ones that are in-house. And I've been able to just listen to them and hear their pain points and understand, you know, what they wish was done differently or done in a different way. And, you know, I'm fortunate that I've been able to listen very closely and relay that information to my amazing team, who's also paid very close attention to these things. And collectively, we've been able to identify this, you know, this gap within the industry and be able to provide a service that really, you know, takes advantage of this, you know, kind of this missing point. And to your last point, you know, I think there's hope for everyone out there. And I will admit, there's a lot of rejection in this industry. And by that, I mean, you're not gonna get a yes every time. And you may not even get a yes. You may not hear back at all. One thing that, you know, is important to recognize is that however great your story might be, there's one that's going to be just as good out there. And I don't want to say that to kind of, you know, put a damper on things, but, you know, really crafting your narrative and taking the time to really establish who you are and what you're about is so important. And that's part of the reason why we are doing what we're doing is we want to make pitching the easiest part of folks' job. Exactly. We want them to spend the most amount of time crafting their story and crafting their narrative and positioning it in a way that, again, is going to be interesting, not only to the recipient who's going to write about it, but to the readers and to the folks who want to learn about them. And so that's where we've really, again, you know, tried to make it a point to allow folks to not have to do the research to create a media list and not have to do, you know, the dirty work of setting up 100 emails that you're going to send out to individuals and crafting each individual message. All of that takes time. And we want to take that little bit of time out, and we want to help folks craft that really strong narrative, that strong story that we know is going to, you know, going to hook readers and get them to learn about their brand. And ultimately, you know, I think we can all agree collectively that, you know, we want people to, of course, consumers, you know, or businesses read about those brands and then become customers. And yeah, that's the whole idea behind Earned Media is, you know, it's a free way to, get yourself in front of the public to get them informed about who you are and ultimately, you know, to get them to be a customer of yours.
Before I want to talk about another topic that's near and dear to your heart, which is scalability. And before we talk about that, I'd like to maybe hear, not necessarily a case study, but do you have any examples that have, of businesses that you can think of? They don't have to be customers of yours, but just maybe a brand that was necessarily not well known and used press in order to gain notoriety and climb up the ladder and climb up the ranks. And now they're such a behemoth of a company. And then I guess another aspect could be what is on the flip side, like a negative. And then there's going to be a reason why my next question makes sense, but I'd like to kind of get that foundation of what was it like for a company to have absolutely nothing and grow to whatever it is today using the proper pitching method, and getting in the press where they need to.
Sure. I have a great example, which will go both ways. And it's very current. Fire Festival. They took social media by storm. They had a very set strategy. They knew exactly how to get people to buy into what they were doing. And they executed flawlessly. I like am beyond impressed. Once I watched one of the documentaries and learned about their strategy, I was bought in. Needless to say, and not in a bad way. I was just like, you know, that's something that I really enjoy is learning about people's advertising strategies. And I think what they did it really well. They kept it very simple. That orange picture, you know, everybody had to click on it. Everybody had to know what it was because it gave you just a little bit, but it didn't give you enough to really know. So you had to find out more.
Can you just give context real quick as to what the Fire Festival is, just for those who have no idea what you're talking about?
Sure. So the Fire Festival, it was a music it was an all-inclusive immersive festival that was supposed to happen last year in the Bahamas. Ja Rule and a gentleman, Billy McFarland, they were the two kind of guys leading the ship. And they basically created this festival with influencers on this deserted island with, you know, music and gourmet food and these really crazy villas that you would stay in. And long story short, they took a bunch of people's money and didn't actually execute on that. And we, like I said, there's a couple documentaries out there that you guys can watch if you're not familiar, and it will certainly open your eyes as to, again, how impressive this strategy was and how misleading it was at the same time, which those of us within the PR industry, we call that a PR crisis. And it was certainly a PR crisis after the fact.
But and then if you can kind of continue with the Fire Festival, the example, did you want to add any more onto that?
No, I think, again, from the negative point of view, you saw very quickly how once that festival happened, people were there, they were taking photos, and it became viral. And all of a sudden it became this huge debacle. And, I think it's, again, it remains to be seen that, if you mislead people and if you're not truthful in what you're offering them, then it has severe consequences. And especially in this day and age with technology and with social media, once word spreads, it's very hard to put that fire out. No pun intended.
Absolutely. Full pun intended. Totally cool.
Exactly. There you go.
So now let's just use the fire festival as the example. It goes bad, and everybody signs up. They take pictures. They're excited. They can't wait. It goes bad. Okay. We can negate the crap storm that they had, but let's just say that it was a success story. And now your business is fully operational, kicking butt, scaling. Now what? Because I'll just leave it at that. Now what? Now you're in the scaling stage. And I feel like that's kind of your sweet spot, is that realm of scaling a company. Would you say that would be somewhat accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. We are a very lean team. But we know as our customers scale, we're also going to need to scale internally. And I think, everyone can acknowledge that. I was at this really interesting networking event a couple months ago, and a gentleman named Roland, I don't recall the name of his company, unfortunately, but they're San Diego based, and they created this platform for plumbers. and they identified this huge need and realized that plumbers don't know how to work technology whatsoever, but they were, you know, missing this big opportunity to collect credit card payments online. So they built this platform, they scaled it. You know, they went from 2 employees to 6 to 12, and their customers grew, you know, I believe it was about 40 to 70%, like month over month. It was a crazy growth scale. But it's, you know, it's one of those things that once you really take off, you've got to be prepared, but both from an internal standpoint, and also, you know, from an external standpoint, because, you know, if your company gains a lot of notoriety, people are going to be knocking on your door. They're going to want to be talking to you. You're going to have customers wanting to know more about you, set up demos, for example, or to, you know, get you on the phone to chat with you for a few minutes, because they have questions. So I think it's important to recognize, you know, where your business is at from a growth perspective, and also within its market presence, and knowing when is the right time to, you know, start looking at human capital, along with, you know, just knowing that you're going to be growing your business from the revenue side as well.
And today we've talked a lot about scaling. We talked a lot about press. We talked a lot about organization and storytelling. But are there any particular tools that you like to use in order to get all of this, to make sense of everything that you're doing?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's a great question. There are a lot of tools within my tool belt that I enjoy using. And again, I know I've mentioned this before, but Twitter is a big one for me just to stay current. Twitter is real time. You know, you can see what's happening. You've got a feed of millions of people sharing information, which is tough to disseminate whether it's true or not. But I think that's kind of the other interesting format about it, is that, you know, you've got to really read into it. You can't just look at a headline and believe it for what it is. And I think aside from that, I'm a really big believer in One Pitch and what we're doing. And I've personally used it and had success, and I know other folks have as well. And again, I think the idea of having something that's very simple, very out of the box, that someone who, you know, wants to look to gain press but may not know how to navigate that or may not have those relationships built, they can come to us. We can help them craft their message, and we can ensure that, you know, there's going to be a good amount of folks that are going to receive it. And we're, you know, we're proud of the performance that we've seen thus far with the open rates and click rates and response rates, especially related to industry averages. And so I think there's, you know, in my tool belt, I kind of have a limited supply, but I think I leverage those tremendously to ensure that, you know, the successful campaigns that we're running, or, you know, whatever I'm doing is going to be executed to my standards.
Absolutely love it. And I think it's a great way to kind of recap and end the conversation. Before we talk about, well, if somebody wanted to sign up for One Pitch right now, mm-hmm. What is the best way to get started?
Sure. They can just head to our website. It's www.onepitch.co. Just go ahead and click on that sign up link. And then whether you're a PR professional, communications professional, or if you're a reporter or an editor within the newsroom, or if you're again, a couple of other roles I won't go into, but you can go to our website, click on that sign up link. It's completely free to sign up and to utilize right now. We're just getting into the final phases of our beta, and we're going to be launching the paid model later this year. So now is a really great time. If you're not quite sure if you need press, or if, you know, if you don't know if you have a good story to tell or yet not, to get on there, because again, it's free, unlimited use. And again, we can help you out if you're new, or if you're a little bit lost.
And by no means are you paying me to say this, but I can say that I just like sharing and talking about really cool stuff. And mm-hmm. I've said this to you off air, I just think what you're doing is really awesome. And from the people who may not know what One Pitch is, it's so easy to kind of get started. Mm-hmm. And just being able to sign up, I think a lot of times in a lot of PR type of businesses, because you're not the only one, there's like a Harrow and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They're ridiculously difficult to kind of get started. And I think you've made it incredibly easy. The onboarding is simple, and it's personal too. And I think that's the key. So if you guys are looking to get more press, I think One Pitch is definitely a great way to at least start the process. And to those of you who are already ramping up, I think it's an even better way because you know the system. To close, I'd like to just hear a little bit, just a little bit more about how can people get the most out of a service like 1Pitch, because you really have to make a proper investment into things like this. And I'd just like to be able to hear a little bit more about what is the best way to get the most out of your experience with 1Pitch.
Oh yeah, no, more than happy to elaborate on that. So really there's three main features that folks can take advantage of. They're really trying to gain press or gain those connections and relationships with media contacts. And first and foremost, the flagship feature that we launched, which is the pitching tool, is a way for, you know, again, for you to generate news, or if you have news, to generate interest within that. Secondary to pitching reporters and journalists would be signing up for the inquiry, which allows them to pitch you. And what that means is, you know, they might be looking for a source or for a comment or for a specific company to feature. And you can set up subscriptions to receive pitches from the journalists and reporters. And lastly, which is a brand new feature that we've just recently launched, it's called the Brand Index. And it's a really unique feature. It's a first of its kind within the industry. And what it is it's really a database that reporters and journalists can access. And it's a list of brands. It's a list of the names of brands, the industries that they're related to, links to their websites for them to kind of dive in and validate who they are. And this is a more passive way to, again, you know, gain the relationships and gain those connections. And it's a really cool feature that we've just launched. Like I said, we're still making some last minute changes to it, but we're excited to see the traction that it's gotten. And it's, again, a really easy and passive way. So if you're not quite confident in your pitching abilities, or if you're not quite ready to generate a story because you don't have any news, this is a really, really easy way for you to at least have the ability to be contacted or to have that accessibility to journalists. And that's really, I'll end on that note. That's kind of our mantra for this year and moving forward, is the democratization of the accessibility to journalists and to reporters and to newsrooms. And that's really what we're focusing on. And we're excited for this year to come, and we're ready to help folks, you know, build those relationships and gain press and gain those placements.
That's awesome, man. Well, Jared, thank you so much for being on the show. If you could tell everybody one more time where they could find you and where they could sign up for 1Pitch.
Absolutely, guys. If you head to www.1pitch.co, you can go ahead and click that sign up link. Like I said, the service is currently free to utilize, and you can use it as much as you want. All the features are available for use. And Jonathan, thank you for having me today, man. I really appreciate it. I was really excited to talk with you and get to share a little bit of my insights with everybody who's listening today as well.
Anytime. And all the links will be in the show notes, so check them out there. And Jared, thank you again for your time. Appreciate it. You've been listening to Blind Entrepreneurship, brought to you by Penji. Our guest this week was Jared Martin. We've all made bad pitches to the press, so I hope this episode helps you think about making a good pitch next time to the press. A good pitch that is easy to understand, simple, and has the right bullet points to catch their attention. Okay, listeners, I am sending a worldwide challenge this week. I'd like you to take a look at your current to-do list for the day or the following day. Look at it deeply and think to yourself, is there anything on this list that if I don't do it today, my business will be fine? Focus on the things that truly matter and the things that move boulders, not pebbles. And when you do, tweet me at GrisbowskiJ or head over to tbeshow.com and drop a comment on this week's episode. You can find more about Jared at onepitch.co. That is onepitch.co, onepitch.co. And as for us, you could check Penji out at penji.co if you need a simple, easy, and affordable graphic design solution for your business. And head over to our podcast website, which is tbeshow.com, to listen to more interviews. And if you enjoyed this episode and you enjoyed this show, it would mean the absolute world to us if you were to share this podcast with a friend, or share it all over the interwebs if you can. It's the only way that we can cure blindness in business. Go out there and execute your vision, everybody. Have a great rest of your day.